Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. This hour, we are discussing the ways Maine is dealing with public safety and emergency management and what the National Guard could possibly be called upon to do. Joining me now, Major General Douglas Farnham. He is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management, and Michael Soschuk, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. This show is for you. What are your questions? What do you want to know about what Maine is doing to protect people and to prepare for this emergency? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us. And Major General Farnham, I'm going to start with you. This is different from other emergencies. You all are not setting up shelters for people who've had to evacuate their home because it's been flooded or because there's a hurricane on the way. How is this? Tell us from an emergency preparedness point of view, how you're having to rethink planning for this kind of emergency.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for having us on. It is different, and a big part of the difference is, you know, where it's a public health emergency at the beginning. You know, Dr. Shah and DHHS and CDC are kind of the face of this issue, and so we're kind of in a support role from the emergency management perspective. But the other part of it, I mean, you know, it's obviously very very different, and one of the pieces of it that we've had to think a lot more about is how we take care of our own people to make sure that they're ready to respond when they're needed. So that's just added a whole different dynamic as we're trying to, prepare to help, but also keep our own forces as healthy as possible, given all the physical distancing and hygiene issues that we're trying to live by at the same time.
Sure, and Commissioner Soschuk, that's a huge issue for police departments in Maine, isn't it? How to protect police officers while they do what they're doing, which is, by definition, face-to-face, hand-to-hand communication.
Yeah, no question about that, Jennifer. And thanks for having us on. It's nice to talk to you again. You know, for all of us, I think at the state level and leadership roles, at any level, you know, force protection, as the general just mentioned, is certainly a priority. And you talk about that a lot on the law enforcement side, but under the Department of Public Safety, we also have EMS. And so the EMS unit has a regulatory authority in these roles, and they're doing amazing work daily, sending out new protocols and kind of rolling with the punches with the rest of society, just so we can keep up to date with the latest that's coming from U.S. CDC, as well as our partners right here in Maine. So, and then with law enforcement, you know, in particular, in this instance, this is that threat you can't see, right? You know, you're really not sure what to prepare for. I think when you hear Dr. Shah talk about really for all of us, we should just naturally assume that everybody has it at this point and just use that social distancing approach and be cautious in these situations. And we've been preaching that to our folks amongst all nine bureaus that function under public safety. And I think our folks have really taken it to heart, and as has the society right here in Maine. So a lot of our residents are really stepping up and doing the right thing.
What are you hearing from your departments? Have there been police departments in Maine or paramedics and EMTs who have already been exposed to COVID-19, and has that affected their department?
Yeah, I think that it's impacted everybody across the board, some directly. As you can remember, very early on, an EMS service in Falmouth, self-quarantined. I think, the things you don't see is the 24/7 impact that this has on individuals. I think that the unknown is always the scariest. You're just not really sure what you're dealing with day in and day out. So I think our fire departments, our EMS, our dispatchers, there's a lot of tension there. There's a lot of folks that are calling all the time. It's an incredibly difficult job. On the law enforcement side, everybody's looking for that personal protective equipment. And everybody's just trying to stay on top. So certainly there are police departments around the state where their officers have received tests, are waiting for results. The list just goes on, just like human beings in any other neighborhood and any other profession in the state.
Sure. Turning back to you, General Farnham, Commissioner Sosachuk mentioned the personal protective equipment. Is that right now the biggest challenge for your agency, getting your hands on that and getting it to the people who need it?
I think that that is it certainly is the topic that most people are talking about right now, and it is a very important to get our hands around and our arms around all the requirements. I know MEMA and CDC are working diligently to try to know what's out there for inventories, what people need, and balance that with what they know is coming in and what they hope is coming in. And getting good data is critical in this, and then being able to communicate that, because I know a lot of the unknown in the PPE arena causes a lot of anxiety out there in Commissioner Sosachuk's forces and all the emergency responders and really everybody talking about the issue.
You know, it seems as though there are a lot of efforts around the state to help produce PPE, whether it's, we had Dan Abbott on the show on Friday talking about the starfish that might help a ventilator serve several people at once, to Flowfold making equipment that they could help for Maine Health. We hear about people making face masks. And I'm wondering, with all these scattered efforts, is MEMA coordinating these efforts to ensure they're done efficiently and distributed to the places that need the equipment most?
Well, I wouldn't say it's all MEMA. I mean, MEMA is helping collaborate with some of that and have some people involved in those efforts. But, you hear a lot about this being a whole-of-government approach. And it's more than a whole-of-government. It's really a whole-of-the-state response. It's really been pretty impressive for me to see the people that have been involved in helping out here. You know, you start with the governor and her response team that she put together. We just got off a call here a few minutes before we came on with you. And the number of people in every agency in the state, from Laura Fortman and DOL to Kirsten Figueroa and working with the HR and all the state employees, to working with the outdoor, making sure we educate people and getting outdoors. Department of Education has been incredibly busy. Ann Head is working with regulation and licensing in order to make this all work. And there's folks like Hannah Pingree and a team that are working to coordinate all these efforts that are going on, because it's more than just the government. They're coming from all different parts of business and communities to find ways to help. And I think that's been, when this is all said and done, that's going to be one of the takeaways, has been if we can find any positive in it all, it's going to be how so many different folks and so many different parts of our state have come together to look for good solutions.
We're talking with Major General Douglas Farnham, who is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Emergency Management, and also Michael Sosachuk, the Commissioner of the Maine Department of Public Safety. Do you have a question about emergency preparedness or about public safety as we look into weeks more of this pandemic emergency? If so, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm looking at an article from just today, Commissioner Sosachuk, saying arrests in southern Maine drop in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. And I want to ask you, is that number down? Are there fewer arrests happening because fewer people are committing crimes? Or are police officers looking at crimes differently and assessing whether they're worth the risk of making that arrest?
Well, I think, as usual, the answer is kind of in the middle there a little bit. I think when you have these society-wide crisis situations, it's not uncommon to have a lull for services. And I think that's our residents that are making decisions. Is that important enough for me to call? Or they don't get as wound up about some situations as they would maybe in a different scenario. You've also got to think that calls for service in general, just imagine, the tens of thousands of people that are now working from home that weren't just a couple weeks ago. So that's going to cut down on something as tragic in some circumstances as motor vehicle accidents, as an example, or driving complaints and that kind of stuff. just because people aren't on the roads. And I think obviously that's not a bad thing in this circumstance. Everybody's doing the right things and they're trying to be cautious. I also think that officers and departments statewide are really looking at officer discretion. And while that's an incredibly important piece every day, we hire police officers for their decision-making capabilities. And then under the law, they have great flexibility in what they can do, whether they're going to arrest somebody or cut somebody a summons and that kind of thing. I think we're really looking at that particular equation with a broader lens. And I know there are a much more stronger focus on the summons situations rather than taking somebody to a correctional facility, whether it's just at a county jail or a local lockup to be bailed. I think officers are really using their discretion and trying to stay away from those positions whenever possible.
I'm wondering, I can only imagine a situation in which a small police department, perhaps one police officer, becomes exposed to coronavirus and therefore, because exposed to the entire department, the whole department becomes sort of out of work for a couple weeks. Have you been thinking about that scenario? And if so, are there plans to, say, have county sheriff's departments take over temporarily?
Yeah, I mean, we've been thinking about that since this all kicked off. And I think that one of the backbones around first responders, whether it's fire, EMS, or law enforcement, is our partnerships. And the folks we work with every single day, the mutual aid components of what we do, and that could be just on a regular Friday where somebody's running busy and they're running call to call and they call a neighboring agency, whether it's a municipality or a county or the state police, to kind of wade in and assist them on the short term. Well, some of those situations may be even on the longer term. And I think we have the same conversations with fire departments and with our EMS agencies. It happens all the time that, a fire department may be focused on a particular fire, and other agencies may float into their municipality, into their town, to cover some of that. And it's the same way on the EMS side. So really, to a large extent, those conversations, those relationships are the same as they have been. But with the this particular nature of this crisis, I think we've certainly freshened those up, and we're very mindful of dusting off a lot of those plans and making sure that everything's up to date and ready to go.
General Farnham, I want to turn to you. I know that a lot of people, whenever there's an emergency, one of the first ideas is to call up the Guard. National Guard has such a fantastic reputation and well-deserved, especially when it comes to responding quickly in terms of something that, commands great logistical capabilities. What are some of the scenarios in which the Maine National Guard might be called up, could be used? How could the Guard be used to respond to this pandemic?
Well, already we have, we have our operations center, our joint operations center up and running and working with MEMA primarily to try to anticipate some of the mission sets that we may be assigned. Our motto, always ready, always there. The guys want to get in the game and be of help. And so we're really in that analysis phase of figuring out what really needs to be done. Transportation is one of the things that we would probably get involved in. And as you mentioned, logistics, we already have a couple folks embedded over in MEMA, and adding a few more to help both MEMA and the CDC in some of that logistical planning. Beyond that, if we start talking about alternative care sites that you see going on in some of the other states, the National Guard will be ready and available to help in the logistics involved in that. But this is one of the issues with this crisis: is it's not the big snowstorm or windstorm or power outage or hurricane or the things that we normally do. So we are thinking outside the box a little bit, but I can assure you and assure the state of Maine that the Guard is ready and willing to get involved where and when we need it.
I can imagine the 133rd being called up, for example, to set up temporary sites for testing. Is that the kind of thing you're thinking about?
Well, that's happening in some states where they're running some of the mobile testing sites, but actually in Maine, so far that hasn't been a need. The mobile testing sites that are set up, and as far as the information we're getting, have been running smoothly, and they haven't needed our help. And so that's the balance of letting people run their pandemic plans. The good thing about emergency management and especially in the healthcare field is they do have plans and they do exercises, and I would say they are more prepared than a lot of other parts of the community for a crisis. I mean, nobody is ready for something of this magnitude or as ready as they'd like to be, but there are plans out there. And as a matter of fact, the National Guard just last fall did an exercise where we used a pandemic scenario, and it allowed us to think through some of these mission sets and establish some of the communications between CDC and MEMA and our own operations center just as an exercise, just coincidentally last fall. So, we're going to learn an awful lot of lessons here, but I think it's not like we haven't thought through some of the scenarios prior.
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, if you have any questions or comments for Major General Farnum or for Commissioner Soschuk, we're talking about emergency preparedness. We're talking about first responders during the coronavirus pandemic. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org.
Maybe you've heard the prediction that by mid-century, the U.S. will no longer have a white majority.
People don't like change in general, right? And this is a big change.
But what if that projection wasn't realistic? I'm Elsa Chang, the shifting boundaries of race and how a census statistic took on a life of its own. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. There's a wonderful world of learning alive and well, great for making good use of time at home for students of all ages at mainepublic.org. It's called PBS Learning Media, and the offerings are diverse and interesting. For example, you can learn if those crows that are waking you up are as super smart as you may have heard, to learning about the common wood frog that will soon be everywhere. How do they survive the cold winter? PBS Learning Media is a free, on-demand, online media service for grades K through 12 and curious adults. For more information or to check it out, go to mainepublic.org, click on the education drop down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about the role of police and other public safety officers during this crisis, as well as how emergency management is being addressed throughout Maine. My guests, Michael Soschuk with the Department of Public Safety and Major General Douglas Farnum with the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. Join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet @MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Michelle LaBrie. She is Director of Penobscot County Emergency Management. Thanks for calling in, Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yes. Thanks for calling in. Tell us how things are in Penobscot County right now. Are there particular challenges you're facing in your part of the state?
Well, right now, we seem to be handling everything particularly well. Some of the challenges that we're seeing is, as you know, we do have pandemic plans and we have continuity plans in place, and we have done a lot of trainings and exercises revolving around pandemics. So, I would never say that we weren't ready for this, but the challenge for us has been the trickling effects of the pandemic itself. So looking at all of the lack of PPE supply and trying to coordinate that information with all of our partners, that seems to be the challenge right now, is getting the resources that is needed.
What measures have you taken so far?
In regards to resources?
Or just preparing and being ready?
Okay. Well, we are taking part of our whole community briefings and efforts. So we are continually doing conference calls and checking in with all of the businesses and community as a whole on to what their statuses are, what their needs are. And then, of course, we're supporting them by, obviously, if they have resource requests, we're uploading those to the state EOC for the CDC to review. And then another large piece of what we're doing right now, too, is disseminating that valuable information that we're getting and sending it out to all of our partners.
What message are you trying to get out to people in Penobscot County about getting through this crisis?
Well, we're focusing on the facts like everyone else, and we're the message we're pushing is the message that's coming down from the governor, and that is to take social distancing seriously so we can prevent further community spread. I know as of today they're not showing that there's community transmission yet in Penobscot County, but we need to plan for the time that it does happen. So, you know, listen to the governor's recommendations and her precautions and take that information seriously.
All right, Michelle, thanks so much for calling in. That's Michelle Labrie, Director of Emergency Management for Penobscot County. Mike Soscheck, do you see any kind of scenario in which police officers will be asked to make sure people are standing at least 6 feet apart from one another and not congregating?
Well, I think what we've talked about with these executive orders that have come down and what we've spread around to law enforcement around the state is really our primary focus is going to be on education. I think just like any other day, we do count on the vast majority of our residents to really show voluntary compliance, because these are common sense, self-preservation style orders. And I think if we're forced to take action in another way, there's certainly means to do that through regular licensing channels. There's a 37B, which is that executive order, and the emergency declaration that does allow for the criminal enforcement of that particular order. But to this point, you know, we really have seen Mainers doing the right things for the right reasons. And I would expect to continue to see that.
All right, let's go to Brian, who's calling from Elliott. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi. I kind of see it differently. I only went out once. I self-isolated for 15 days, and then I had to go to work just the other day. And people are out and about, and people all over the place. And I think people need to be staying home and made to stay home. If the Postal Service can deliver us mail 6 days a week, why can't the military deliver us food in this manner to keep people out of the grocery stores, which has to be contributing to community spread? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Sure. General Farnham, has that been considered, having the National Guard actually deliver groceries?
I wouldn't say we've considered delivering groceries. I mean, obviously, you look on the news and see in some states that they're using the National Guard to deliver lunches to the kids that are out of school for their school meals, and to other shut-ins like Meals for Wheels type of activity. But as far as there's been no talk of, you know, closing supermarkets and, you know, closing supermarkets and having the National Guard deliver food to the general population. I think, you know, everybody has a different take on what is safe or what isn't safe, or and there's a lot of rumor out there, a lot of disinformation or misinformation. And I think that what I tell people and what I look at as far as our planning goes is that I look at what the CDC is saying, what the U.S. CDC is saying, what the Maine CDC is saying. I think, I've said several times one of the highlights of the day is listening to Dr. Shaw's press conference, because he approaches it with such a level-headed, fact-based, commentary that just let you sit back and say, yes, this is, you know, this is a problem. It's a crisis. But if we listen to the facts, we can do the right things. And I think it's all of our responsibility. And like the caller mentioned, I mean, we all see things out there. We say that's not, you know, the best decision making. And hopefully the community kind of polices itself along those lines. Thank you.
An email here from Melanie. I just want to urge folks to send donations now to your local EMS and fire departments. I am on a fixed income, but felt that a good chunk of the $1,200 I'm supposed to get should go to our small volunteer fire department here in Georgetown. I just sent a hefty check. Commissioner Soschek.
Oh, Melanie, thank you so much for that. That's amazing all the way around. And I think that what we're used to in Maine is small volunteer fire departments, EMS structures, small rural-oriented law enforcement. And I think our communities tend to step up to support them. And right now is no different. And I know that I've had some communication with some fire chiefs and others that would put out a Facebook post as an example that says, we're short on PPE. You know, if you have any in the community, could you please donate that to our fire department? And to have an overwhelming response to that. And contractors, local contractors and folks that would step up, private citizens that happen to have some, they saw this coming a little bit and maybe they went out and they have a couple extra and they're bringing those in. So small and large, routinely stepping up to take care of folks. And that's a big, big deal. And I think that, you know, first responders, you know, appreciate that friendly wave and taking care of them day in and day out. That goes a long, long way. But boy, if you've got some extra PPE or love kicking around, feel free to share it with the men and women that we have out there as first responders.
We'll go to Gail, who's calling from Norway. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for the general, I believe it is, National Guard person.
Yep.
Yes. I live next to the 133rd Armory in Norway, and I see them meet every month. And I'm just interested when you said that the last fall you did a pandemic exercise, because I also saw online that there's some questions being raised about what a coincidence, quote unquote, that Event 201 held a global pandemic exercise in last November. And I'm just interested, moreover, whether in your planning, you ever envisioned scenarios like the gentleman before me said about delivering food and potentially going into homes to check on people who have tested positive and enforcing any kinds of rules that may come down the pike in regard.
Okay, sure, Gail. And I am curious, too, to find out, from General Farnham, what did you learn from the pandemic exercise last fall that you're able to use right now?
Well, first, the exercise was a operation center, kind of a tabletop exercise, which we mainly worked on communication, communication methods between the National Guard, MEMA, and the CDC. So it wasn't a large scale where we actually mobilized soldiers and airmen to go actually do anything. It was more of a communication type exercise. We basically brushed off those plans and it got us thinking again about what some of those mission sets would look like. I guess that was the biggest thing we learned for those that hadn't been involved in the past. As far as any of the other issues, we've thought of different mission sets, but policing the citizens of Maine is not one of them. I'll leave that for Commissioner Soschek to do.
Gail, thanks so much for your call. We'll go to Bev, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Bev. Go ahead.
Hi. The back of the Lysol can says kills coronavirus. And I can't understand why the National Guard doesn't. There's 16 counties. They don't take those empty trucks in Augusta, fill them with toilet paper, Lysol, the things that we need, a bottle of Tylenol, hand it out to every take that truck to every county and hand it out. We can do a drive-by. We can get a mask. Why aren't the police wearing a face mask? Why? They're first responders. Come on. Why can't the police get a face mask?
Okay, sounds like we have two different questions, one for General Farnham and one for Commissioner Soschek. General Farnham, why don't you go first?
That scenario really is not one that we've looked at up until this point. And again, when it comes to what folks need and what we need to do distributing different products. I'll kind of leave that up to initially to the CDC and Maine CDC for what their recommendations are, given the stage we are in the current pandemic.
And Commissioner Soszczyk, why aren't police officers wearing masks?
Yeah, I think similar to the general's response, you know, we lean on CDC very heavily for their guidance. And they would say, even from a general public perspective, that if you have COVID-19, that you should be wearing a mask. If you don't, then you shouldn't be wearing a mask. And that's not to say that that won't evolve or change over time. But a piece of that is the supply issue in general. And I think the underlying reasons for that is that they just simply look at this particular virus, and they've made that decision at a national level. And Maine CDC has backed that that's not the best use of our equipment. And they look at risk reward. They look at how much of a protective factor is that mask providing if, in fact, you don't have it. So, again, somebody else that has it would be wearing the mask, and we would not. And I think for our law enforcement folks, as an example, you know, a conversation that we're having on a regular basis is if you find yourself going into a situation where you need a mask, you know, you've tripped some of these protocols that say, okay, I need some protective equipment. You need to ask yourself why you're there and what kind of a job are you about to provide? What kind of service are you about to provide? As an example of that would be, it's routine for first responders. You go to a medical call and it's all hands on deck. So you have EMS personnel, you have some firefighters that are helping out, law enforcement's right there. Everybody grabs a corner of a stretcher. Everybody's helping out, picking up gear and running around the scene to help out. And if that's necessary, we're absolutely going to do that without question. And that will never fail. But on the other side, if we don't need to be there, rather than having two EMS folks approach somebody, maybe you have one. Maybe you have your firefighters and your law enforcement officers staging outside. If you need something, call me. I'm right there. I'll come in and assist. But if not, then I'll stay out here, just like the general public should just be very, very mindful of that social distancing and how that really is an effective tool for fighting this virus.
It sounds like, Commissioner, that's going to be difficult for some police officers, emergency medical personnel to do. I know their personalities. They don't want to stand on the sidelines and watch somebody else help.
Oh, you've talked to many of us over the years, Jennifer, and we appreciate that. And you are absolutely right. You know, we have to have those conversations over and over again with folks because, you know, these folks want to help. That's why they're in this particular calling as a first responder. Whatever hat they happen to wear and whatever color that happens to be, none of that matters. They want to get out there and they want to help people. But, you know, you can only help others if you're safe and healthy along the way. And that's equally as important for the long run.
All right, Bev, thanks for your call. We have a question here from David, and I think this is actually a question for the Secretary of State, but you may know the answer, Commissioner Soszczyk, about car registration. My sister has been sick. She did not re-register her car in February. Now she's unable to register online, and town hall is closed. Is it true she can wait until the emergency order is lifted? That is true, correct?
That's absolutely true, and there'll be a 30-day grace period after the emergency declaration has been lifted by the governor. So there is plenty of time there, and you'll find that more times than not when you're talking about licensing, certifications, and things of that nature. Certainly check on websites and do a little digging, but we certainly have seen that, whether it's inspections or registrations or licensing. I've yet to run into a situation where that was not all continued across the board.
Well, we're speaking with two commissioners, Michael Soszczyk, the Department of Public Safety Commissioner, and Douglas Farnum, the Department of Emergency Management. He is also responsible for the National Guard and veterans in Maine. If you have a question about the statewide pandemic response when it comes to safety or planning, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get an email in, a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
The world's reporters and producers have a singular mission: to put you in touch with events around the globe that affect life here in the U.S. From the coronavirus to global trade to efforts to dial back climate change, each day we bring you fresh insights, unique voices, one-of-a-kind reporting. Join us for an hour that takes you around the globe. It's right here. It's the world.
Join us this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Heard enough news, love classical music, perhaps our Maine Public Classical station is just what you need. Never heard about it? Maine Public Classical has a presence in 7 areas around the state. In Portland, Bangor, Waterville, also in western Maine and Fryeburg, on the southern coast around Booth Bay and Brunswick, one down east, and also in many areas of York County. Where and how to find Maine Public Classical is at mainepublic.org. Classical music is timeless and can be incredibly relaxing whenever you have the time. Maine Public Classical.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling, a special 2-hour Maine Calling. Today we're talking about statewide strategies for dealing with the coronavirus emergency. Joining me, Major General Douglas Farnham with Maine's Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management, and Michael Soschuk with the Department of Public Safety. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Deborah, who is calling from Belfast. Hi, Deborah. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is if Maine is requiring people that are coming across the border, on not even just out-of-state people, but people who've been away and come back, to quarantine for 2 weeks. And also how it applies to people that are flying into Maine.
Commissioner Farnham, do you know the answer?
I can't tell you the exact all the exact rules right now. All I could say is make, you know, when people come into the country, that they follow whatever the instructions are that are given to them at the time, depending on their travel history. And then and as far as the border goes, you know, I think there's nothing official at the border, but I know the governor has mentioned, and I think it's pretty much a common, you know, conversation about when people are traveling. First of all, we're not encouraging people to travel unless they absolutely need to, and if they do and it's appropriate, they should be quarantining and following all the other physical distancing and hygiene recommendations that are out there.
Sure. And following up with Deborah's question, I understand, General, that Rhode Island is apparently having the National Guard help find people who have come from New York and telling them to self-quarantine. Do you see a scenario where that could happen here?
I think they've stopped that in Rhode Island. I know their guard was in support of the state police there. I don't think that we would see that here. I mean, Maine is a little bit... Maine is different, and I think you've heard in the last day or so, we value and respect our the citizens who have second homes in Maine, and it does provide a problem in some, or a perception of a problem that may be in some areas, but I think most would be encouraged to, again, to follow all the guidelines that they're being told to follow in other places, and one of those is to only travel and go places that you really need to go.
All right, Deborah, thanks for your call. I have a question for you, Commissioner Soschuk, and maybe it's because, you know, we've seen too many movies, but maybe not. Are you concerned as this goes on for weeks on end that there could be public disorder with hoarding and people facing financial problems, face problems like looting or lawlessness?
No, I really don't. I think when I hear about people being unruly or hoarding, I think you've seen a little bit of that now, just with that tension and that people are on edge. But I can tell you, when the last time I was in the grocery store a few days ago, those aisles were full. Folks are doing an amazing job. You know, we're talking about public safety, but how about folks running those cashier lanes and going to work every day to help everybody else out? So I think there's lots of goods out there. I think if we stick to a fact-based approach to this and listen to the experts that are in place, we'll know how to work through this. And if, in fact, one of those negative scenarios happens, we're certainly prepared to address that. But I don't believe that's where we're heading as a state.
All right. An email from John, and I think he speaks for a lot of people here. He writes, hotel workers, truckers, other travelers are not practicing social distancing. How can distancing or barriers be enforced? General Farnham, any thoughts? Is this part of the conversation?
Yeah, that's that's a difficult question. I don't think I have the answer to that other than to say I have noticed over the last 2 weeks the seriousness that people are taking these instructions has been increasing almost daily. You know, I think as time goes on, people modeling the right behavior will encourage others to do the right thing. And again, I have seen it getting better. The grocery stores 2 weekends ago were crazy. Last weekend, I thought were still a lot of people, and then this weekend, I thought you could tell people were attempting to keep their social or physical distance. So I think as we go through this and people are, again, modeling the correct behavior and continuing to emphasize it, I think we'll only see an improvement there.
All right, we're going to go to Casimir, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, go ahead.
Hello. There is a possible stimulus payment on the way. As far as emergency preparedness is concerned, do you have spending recommendations specific to this crisis, short term and long? I'm going off air.
General Farnham, thoughts?
A little out of my area of expertise, but I'll just throw my own personal opinion at it. I would think that people have to approach it from their own needs. Depending what bills need to be paid in order to take care of you and your family, those things would come first. I think if you have the wherewithal to help some of your local small businesses and folks that have been staying open and supporting you during all this time, I think that's a reasonable solution. And then there's nothing wrong with thinking that that maybe I ought to tuck a little bit of money away to help the next time that there's a crisis of some sort, which may not be as large scale, but maybe at a much more regional or even personal level that you have some resources to help yourself out the next time around. But that really, I think the advice really depends on a person's personal situation, and you do what you got to do.
We'll go to Kevin, who's calling from Brewer. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hey, General, just a couple quick questions, please. First one, any of our units going to get placed out of state? And secondly, if it need be, any talk of calling up capable retirees?
Well, I recognize the voice, so I'd question the word capable on that. But there is no discussion at this point of Maine National Guard folks going outside the state, and there actually have been some call outs and publicity around calling people back into the military, especially folks that have healthcare career fields.
Kevin, thanks so much for the call, and I'd love to know the inside story on that one. Jeff on Facebook says, close the airports like a few weeks ago. You can still close them now. Is that part of the discussions at all? General Farnham, yeah.
Yeah, I have not heard that conversation. It's a little bit like the borders. I think different... again, depending on the risk as to where the flights are coming from, that is a consideration. I think when the overseas flights that are coming into the locations that are receiving the international flights have some special requirements and procedures. But again, we're not closing the borders to come across the main border. So I haven't heard any discussion about the airports.
All right. And I think if Dr. Shaw were here, just because what I've heard him say in the past is it's already here. This is not being brought from people from away. This is something that's the enemies within our border already. We're going to talk to Nemo calling from Steuben. Hi, Nemo. Go ahead. Nemo, are you there?
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Nemo, are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Go ahead.
In the play, Camus wrote, "There's more to admire in men than to despise." This is a time for absolute kindness. There's so many people without food, without everything. Then I have a question. I'm a designer artist. I had just finished a book on voting and defining, and I was about to look for a printer for it and go into business, but it looks like there's no business anymore. There's nothing I can do. I can't ask you to solve this problem. I'm 83, so I can't wait for forever. Thank you, Jennifer.
Nemo, as I think General Farnham said for a couple callers ago, a little out of your area of expertise, but any words of wisdom from either of you?
Yeah, I'll jump in there just because the general's had his fair share, I think, about airports and some other things that may not fall under his purview, I guess. But I think we're all very, very conscious of the impact that this entire crisis has on the economy. And to folks like Nemo and others, I can tell you from behind the curtain with the rest of the cabinet and the COVID response team that I see what you see, and that is that the governor is fiercely loyal to the state of Maine. She understands that every decision that she makes is incredibly important for those that it impacts, the entire state. And I think people are asking the right questions for the right reasons, and they're ever mindful of those situations, small and large, and how they're going to trickle down to our neighbors and to our family members. So I would ask, for Nemo to hang in there, and hopefully he gets his book published. And when that'll happen or when that particular marketplace will be open for business, I don't know. But I can tell you that the state of Maine is open for business. The Department of Public Safety certainly is. And we're trying to do the best we can for everybody out there.
Commissioner Soszczyk, I wanted to ask you for just some practical advice for all of the citizens in Maine. Would you have people think differently about picking up the phone and dialing 911? In this time, for what purposes they call dispatch?
Well, it's a great question. I think that if you go back to basics and you think about 911 is an emergency phone call. And to be honest with you, I would have had the same conversation before this particular crisis because people do call for some things that I don't believe are emergencies. One of the busiest calls that we have around the state, period, are 911 cell phone hangups, where officers then respond to an area to try to determine, is that a legitimate 911 call or is that just somebody that made a pocket dial? And now we have officers responding to make sure that people are okay. So I would always be, just encouraging people to be cautious and to look at their situations. If you are in danger and you need help, please call 911 and we will figure it out. If you think you're in danger and there's a question and you're really not sure, please call 911 and we'll figure it out. There's a lot of things that in this particular crisis or in everyday walk of life may not be an emergency. If you take a deep breath for a second, think about what the circumstances are and then make that decision, as a responsible adult, then again, we will help you figure that out. But I would definitely be additionally mindful of that internal conversation, if you will, in today's age.
And General Farnham, I'm going to give you the last word as we go into the weeks ahead. What is your advice for the people of Maine in terms of how they can best help their community? I remember during the ice storm, Governor King at the time kept saying neighbors helping neighbors. What is the Maine Emergency Management Association and what is MEMA looking at this agency looking at this time for what citizens can be doing?
Well, I think, Jennifer, I think it's been alluded to already by a couple of the callers. I think it's to follow the best instructions and the information is out there on doing all the things they can to, you know, to so-called flatten the curve and following the distancing requirements and the hygiene requirements, and just doing all the doing all those things so that the folks that are going to work, that the first responders and the healthcare workers that are going don't have the worst case scenario to face here in a couple of weeks. And beyond that is to continue to do the really main things that we see out there every day, walking in the neighborhoods and seeing, you know, sidewalk art that the kids are putting out, thanking healthcare workers, and the signs people are putting up, and the engagement from 6 feet away with neighbors that doesn't always happen like it should. And I think this is a time, like I said, I think at the very beginning, when this is all said and done, what's going to come out of here, you know, out of here is a lot of positive stories. And hopefully a few months from now, those are the calls that you're going to be getting, is telling all the wonderful main things that have happened here in these terrible weeks.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. That was Major General Douglas Farnham, Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans and Emergency Management. Also with us, Michael Soschuk, the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. On tomorrow's program, we're going to talk more about the federal stimulus package with Congressman Jared Golden. And we also talk with the head of the Jackson Laboratory about dealing with pandemics and get answers to your questions about the spread of COVID-19. And a request, if you're a healthcare worker, we invite you to leave us a voicemail about your experiences during this crisis. That phone number, 207-330-4781. You can also email your comments to tellmemore@mainpublic.org. We're looking to hear from healthcare workers about how you're doing during these extraordinary times. Again, 207-330-4781. The comments may be part of an upcoming special program. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.